Live from beautiful downtown Southern Maryland, it's time for Gears of Resistance episode number 16 for the 20th of September 2015. We are making sure that's actually right. Yeah, 20th of September. So let's just get into it. A couple news stories this week, and yeah, we'll go on a little tangent. I'm assuming that we're going to name this episode hashtag I Stand With Ahmed. And if you've been following the news this week, you probably know what that means. And we'll get into my thoughts on the story and how it focuses in the bigger issue of STEM and STEAM and education, especially here in the U.S. But before we do that, let's do some other stories so that I get those in and make sure that I don't run over time. All right. So, it's last week's episode. All right. So, a article from the Wall Street Journal by Jeffrey Fowler talks about we need the right to repair our gadgets. People can fight back against planned obsolescence by fixing the tech we already own, but consumer electronics industry isn't making it easy. So, kind of like, I think, what kind of gave rise to the maker movement, STEM, STEAM, was that a lot of people grew up in an era where due to several factors, not the least of which was just the manufacturing technology at the time, things were a lot easier to rip apart and replace components on the inside. Everything was, you know, go back to like your old radios and VCR. A lot of things were through-hole components. There was a lot of big DIP integrated circuits. A lot of things that you could fix pretty easily. Flash forward to, you know, the mid-2000s. The smartphone, you know, the BlackBerry craze, early 2000s, you know, Microsoft launched their versions of a tablet. So that's kind of, to me, in my mind, that's the first beginning watershed moments of technology going from, like, everyone had a desktop PC that you could unscrew the side panel, get in there, replace the video card, replace the memory, upgrade the hard drive. And then, you know, starting in the mid-2000s, things started getting smaller, tighter, because, yes, there was the general consumer desire to have things that were smaller, cheaper. And technology in the manufacturing world got to the point there where it was easy to do that. But there was, I guess, an unintended side effect. So as things have gone from massive integrated circuits down into these very, very tiny little BGA, very fine, very small, very difficult to replace components, which, yes, gave us sexier products, but now we don't have the ability to replace it. For instance, the iPhone, you know, it's been around now, what, 8 years? And to this day, if my battery dies or if I want it to have more storage, I am pretty much crap out of luck. Now, if you are adventurous, you can replace the batteries. And there are certainly stores that have popped up in shopping malls around the country that you can go in and get things like your screens replaced. Or your batteries. But still, the point is, you or the average consumer can't do it. Or they become so afraid of voiding warranties or whatnot that they refuse to do it. on their own. And I think as a technology person myself, we've then basically we've done a disservice. We have sort of in the pursuit of making things sexier, smaller, to meet consumer demand, we've left out the other part of the equation, which is making things maintainable, making things upgradable. And I think there's a way to strike a balance between the two. I don't think that you have to sacrifice the aesthetics, say, of an Apple product, or you know, keep the aesthetics and then sacrifice being able to replace the memory or upgrade the hard drive. I mean, it wasn't that many generations ago of Apple products that you could do that. And I'm picking on Apple, and that's because that's, you know, they are probably the poster child of unupgradable or unrepairable hardware. Certainly, they're not the only ones. But I think as an industry as a whole, you know, arguing for the ability to add some level of repairability into products. And I'm not saying that we need legislation or laws to enforce this, but I think it would be good on behalf of the consumer to replace the things or have the upgradability of things that we tend to, you know, things that tend to break or we tend to run out. So replacing the battery, being able to replace the screen, being able to upgrade memory. And, you know, the memory ones is kind of an easy one because it would be a little SD card slot. And you know, there's, and then again, I get the idea that it's a marketplace. It's free and open. People can go with an Android device and they have that right. And on the memory side, at least, and on the battery. But I'm just saying in general, I think we technology industry, could better serve, our customers by building things that people can maintain themselves. And it kind of will flow in, this argument will flow into, my next couple articles. So I'm going to save it for that, but, I'll put the link to this article. It does make a strong case of, you know, taking the, aesthetics of product design to an extreme can do a disservice, and we'll get more to that. So the next article is actually, this is selfish advertisement. This is an article I wrote for Mouser, their Bench Talk blog, which kind of follows hand in hand with the previous one, which is how technology companies can build a can-do generation. So same concept of being able to have, you know, products that are repairable, upgradable, but instead of doing it just because it would be nice for the consumer to be able to fix things without throwing it away and all the environmental blah, blah, blah. I make the argument, and this is going to tie in later to the Ahmed Mohammed story, is that – and because there's a story starts with there's a PhD over in the UK who a few months back or maybe a year or so back had an article talking about young people, I'll read her quote, young people in Britain have become a lost generation which can no longer mend gadgets and appliances because they have grown up in a disposable world. And I'm like, okay. And we're going to blame the lost generation on that because they decided how products were going to be built. And so I find it very disheartening a bit that the argument is let's blame the youth of today for not being able to fix things because we've built products that you can't fix. And I think that does a very bad disservice to everything that STEM and the maker movement and STEAM stands for. That, you know, there's responsibility involved. You can't just, you know, throw down the gauntlet or throw down the, you know, the hammer and say, God darn it, do better. This, it's all your fault. Especially when you're dealing with the quote unquote lost generation or the youth of today. And I would argue it's not really just the youth either. There's quite a few people that are older, much older, that can't fix their stuff either. So again, the whole argument of making it a generational argument, I think, does a disservice to the bigger argument that technology in general has gotten to the point where everyone, not just the youth, can't repair or fix things. And that's going to lead to problems. And in fact, let's just get ready. I'm going to skip my other two stories, save those for the end, and get into, because I think there's a good thread here. So unless you've been living in I wouldn't say that. This has gotten some national attention, some international attention, but you're probably, if you're not outside of the tech sphere, you can conceivably not heard about it, especially here in a time of, at least here in the U.S., presidential debates and all whatnot are heating up. So here's the story. Let me bring up one of the an article. Let's see here. Bring it up from Geek Dad. So this past week, a ninth grader at a school down in Irving, Texas, who happens to be a Muslim, his name is Ahmed Mohammed, was doing like what many of us geeks do. We tinker. We take things apart. We put things back together. We make things that didn't exist before. We take things and repurpose them and make new things. And so Ahmed took various electronics components, put it together into a clock that he then put inside of a pencil box and took it into his school and demonstrated it to, from what I understand from the story, is it was, I've heard two different things. He showed it to his English teacher, but I've also heard he showed it to one of his, an engineering teacher or someone that, I guess, teaches technology. Either case, the teacher looked at it and goes, that looks like a bomb. Okay. If it's like, especially if it was an English teacher who doesn't know what they're looking at, I can sort of understand that there would be some concern, regardless of the fact that he was a Muslim, because there's an understory here about racism and it was because he was Muslim. And this was around September 11th, if not on September 11th. One teacher saw it, had a concern, but this is a school that has hopefully a lot of science teachers and other technology professionals that could have looked at it and go, well, there's a lot of electronics. Yeah, sure. That fits in a little pencil box, but where's the explosives? Like, where's the part that actually goes boom? So I'm very surprised that no other adult there had any knowledge of technology to be able to look at this and go, yeah, that's not a bomb. And then you know what? If that was just an internal thing and that's the end of it, so be it. So here's where it starts getting now really crazy. They call the police, not just a cop, but apparently like five cops show up, and then they put him in handcuffs and arrest him for, I don't know what, having imagination, having creativity, for I don't know what the charges are. Obviously it's surrounding this quote unquote bomb, which is really nothing more than a homebrewed clock. He gets taken away. Since then though, there has been an outpouring of support. Tech companies, Mark Zuckerberg, Twitter, even the White House has reached out, to Ahmed and said, hey man, you know, you did nothing wrong. It was an abuse of the system. And you know, we're going to make it right. So if you're interested in actually helping out, I donated a few bucks over. There's a GoFundMe, which is GoFundMe.com/IStandWithAhmed. And if you go into any social media and put in hashtag #IStandWithAhmed, you can see all the different ways you can support him. He's got a Twitter account now, which has the picture of him in handcuffs, which is, again, very disconcerting. So here's where I'm going to take the discussion. There is very good potential that, yes, there may have been some, because of his faith, that may have played a part in what happened. That, in my opinion, is harder to pull out, you know, because everyone can hide behind the masks of I'm not a racist, I'm not a I don't have Islamophobia or whatnot. So let's just give everyone the benefit of the doubt that this was not racial or religious perpetuated. So let's go with what I think is the bigger concern, and that is the lack of scientific and technological knowledge of scientific and technological vocabulary in this country. So this ties back all the stories that we've already hit on. The Wall Street Journal, consumers need to be able to repair and upgrade their stuff. My article about, you know, yes, we've got this lost generation who can't repair anything, but it's not their fault. My point was, it's not just a youth thing. It's people in general, of any age really, that can be, afflicted by this lack of scientific and technological understanding. And then this story hits this week, which I think is perfectly exemplifies it, because not everyone needs to be an electrical engineer. Not everyone needs to be a, PhD in engineering, but people do need to have a basic scientific and technological understanding to be able to look at things and rationally process them and look at them. Now, certainly here's the other part of it is, like, if I was a kid and I was going to make a bomb and intending on blowing up my school, I probably wouldn't go show it to my teacher as my first, you know, my first inclination would be go here, look at my bomb. But the point is, people in this country, their ignorance is not an excuse. People have got to take responsibility, like any part of society. We live in a civilized, we like to think we're a civilized society. And that really means, yes, there are rights, but there's also responsibilities. And responsibilities in a technologically savvy, technologically advanced nation as ours, there's a responsibility to be able to have a general understanding of scientific principles and technological understanding, because if we don't have at least a common base, then when we get to politics and policy, we can never have smart, intelligent debate or conversation if we go off of people or debating that have no have irrational thoughts or irrational beliefs. Science requires a common understanding, a common agreement. Even if you don't agree on necessarily what the data shows, you have to have an appreciation of the scientific principles and how it works. Because, yes, not everything has been decided with 100% certainty. But science is always about finding the truth. It's not about finding what's convenient and reinforces my, you know, predisposed beliefs, my predisposed biases and judgments. Science is about always looking for what is the truth of whatever aspect of science you pursue. And then in technology and engineering, it's a little bit different, because whereas science is about just the pure research, the pursuit of knowledge, you know, engineering and technology is more about taking scientific knowledge and creating things that help society and help the human condition to live a better life, an easier life, a safer life. But again, and the reason I'm very concerned is because we're very much in this transitional period in our evolution as a species and as a economic, where we are now going to be in soon this post-oil, post-digital world, where things like self-driving cars, renewable energy, artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, sensors everywhere, where things will have a net neutrality arguments. And the list goes on, all these things that in the next couple years we're going to have to deal with. And if we can't talk intelligently with each other, if we are simply going off what we think and what our biases are and what our prejudices are, we're never going to advance our culture or our civilization or our economy or anything else about the human condition. So I'm very concerned that, you know, we've always kind of felt that people don't really know what they're talking about when it comes to, you know, science, technology. And this thing here that happened with Ahmed, for all the crap that he's had to deal with, I hope is becoming a galvanizing moment where people can realize we need to step back and take a look at not just the education of our children, which we've gone so overboard with just focusing on things like math and reading and writing. We've lost the ability to have scientific reasoning. We've lost the taught to have rational thought. We have simply created, and it's again, not just children, but as culture as a whole, number crunchers and people that just write. And there's, it's not to say that, because again, we're STEAM and math is in there, mathematics. But there's more. There is certainly, and especially in the public education system throughout, at least here in the US, we need to do a better to integrate science, technology, engineering, and the arts back into with math, because it takes we want a whole person. We want someone who is, yes, has an interest and perhaps an expertise in a certain area, but everyone has to have a general understanding, a general appreciation of all the aspects of, again, in my opinion, the STEAM movement, because it's how you form a basis of conversation. And if we don't, it's about building a vocabulary so that we can have discussions about, okay, we're moving towards self-driving cars. What does that mean? And we can have rational discussion and not just purely people making emotional arguments. So that's it. That's going to be my rant. That's, again, it sucks for Ahmed. But it looks like, and I'm hoping, and it feels like that there's going to be a lot of goodness coming out of that. And I think that's, you know, a very positive sign that we recognize that this was an abuse of justice. It is an abuse of, or it is a disservice to scientific and technological and engineering, tinkering and building a generation. We talk about, we want to have a generation that can fix their own stuff. And then we have this crap where people are getting arrested just because they do what all nerds, what all geeks have done for dozens, if not hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. And now we're out, you know, arresting people because of that. That's crap. And it needs to end. And like I said, I'm not going to make a judgment as to whether this was truly motivated because he is Islamic, he's a Muslim, or not. If it is, it's even worse. But I'm going to hang my argument on just, this is a sign that we need to do better to educate our entire culture, our entire populace, not just the youth, but adults as well, to have some literacy when it comes to science and technology, engineering, art, and math. Whew. All right. So we'll wrap up here with two other things. One, the Fishino. So it's an Arduino that has Wi-Fi, a micro SD card, and a real-time clock with battery backup built in. So it's basically, it's an Arduino that is built to kind of become the prototype development for the Internet of Things. So it's very much tailored to what about embedded electronics needs to be there by default in order to do Internet of Things. So obviously an internet connection to be able to talk over the internet. So building that in by default. And I believe they are using, it's using the ESP8266 as their Wi-Fi, I believe. Boom, 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 boom. Let me just go make sure. They've got a real-time clock. So again, things like if you hook up sensors, you want to be able to take date timestamps of readings, you need a real-time clock. And then storing that locally on a micro SD, it's kind of like a backup. You know, a lot of this, a lot of stuff that I'm doing at, like with the Photon, because it's so small, there's no place for a real, micro SD. So we're relying on sending that data to the cloud and then the cloud storing it, the, you know, date time stamped. And actually by leveraging the net, you know, you don't even have to have a real time clock because the server will take the date time stamp and it's kind of close enough for when it receives a packet that, hey, I want to store this sensor reading. But there are certainly things where you may want to have some onboard storage, and this provides it within the same rough footprint of a normal Arduino. What was the other thing? I think there's a if you notice, there's a, if you're looking at this on the video, there's an extra header row. I think what they do is they do some, they have level shifters. So whereas most of the board, I think, is 3.3 volt, I think there's a handful of pins that they shift up to 5 volts, if I recall reading that correctly. I was on a different page the other day. Let's see here. But anyway, Fishino, I'll put a link to it in the show, but it's F-I-S-H, like a fish, I-N-O dot I-T. So Fishino dot I-T. You can check that out. And I don't know if they're for sale yet. Or not. Yeah, I'm not sure. But it looks promising. I'm guessing they're probably, I would guess they're going to probably be in the $50 range, would be my guess. $50 to $60 would be my guess. What's my last story? Oh, so last story, we talked about Octopart Common Parts Library a few episodes back, which is basically Octopart is a website that you can go search for parts and you can get like all their data sheets. So what they did was they created a what's called their Common Parts Library. So they said, we're going to look at like all these products that people use in various open source and even some proprietary projects. And we're going to look at what are the common parts that people use in terms of integrated chip, integrated circuits, resistors, capacitors. What are those kind of things that people seem to be using a lot? And they built this library that you can go search for. And you know, in theory, the places like the Mausers of the world, the DigiKeys, the Jamicos of the world, because these are so common, probably will have these in bulk and they will probably have a lot of these parts at a really good price. So it saves you from having to guess, especially if you're kind of new to circuit design. It's like, hey, I know I want to do some surface mount resistors, but there's like literally a billion and one when I go search. What are the ones that probably will meet with, you know, I'm building something that's like an Arduino. What do I build? What do I use? So that was Common Parts Library for kind of production things. Now they've just released Common Parts Library for prototyping. So now it's a separate library, but they're going to show all the parts that people are using to do the prototype. So before you go to production, when you're experimenting, basically, what are people using? And the same thing, they've got all the platforms that are popular, the BeagleBones, the Arduinos, the Raspberry Pis, the TI, MSP Launchpad. There's even the Photons on there now, Electric Imp. And then there's just different boards. So like a lot of breakout boards, because a lot of times when you're just experimenting, oh, I'm going to try this little accelerometer. You could either buy the, and a lot of times these are now, they're such small surface mount that you can't really breadboard them. So what a lot of people build is breakout boards that puts all the resistors, capacitors, and the chip, and then basically puts it out to a set of header pins that makes it breadboarding a lot easier. So again, octopart.com, you can hit up there, their common parts library. There's now a prototyping and a production library. And again, if you're just starting and you want to say, what seems to be the most popular accelerometer, and they do everything. They even got a nice one on wearables, which is nice. Batteries, voltage regulators, LEDs, motor drivers, audio displays, relays, linear integrated circuits, digital integrated circuits, resistors, capacitors, potentiometers. The list goes on and on, even inductors. So again, it's built towards prototyping. So if you're doing breadboard work, these are the stuff that if you buy this parts, you'll probably have a fairly easy time getting your prototype up and running. And then you can switch over to the production when you're ready to go to a smaller, when you want to build your final board, you can figure out. It'd be interesting if there's a way to go, okay, if you're using this part in prototyping, that translates to using this part in production. That would be cool. So anyway, check that out. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, so one last thing. Just picked up it was a pretty good price. It's not the fanciest, sexiest, but it's a little rework station from on Amazon. It's $58. Gives you some temperature control, some airflow control, and then a couple different tips to help, depending on what you're trying to either solder or unsolder in terms of little surface mount. It's not too bad. And then there's also some nice little anti-static tweezers. Really like the ones that have like a little bend in them. Those are always, the one on the far right. So anyway, just if, again, when you're just starting out, and you don't have a ton of money, I've played with them for a few times. I got my first one, and back here in the back, the fuse assembly was broken. Basically the part, I guess, got knocked around in shipping in transit and broke off. I was able to kind of fix it a little bit, but I wasn't comfortable. But the company sent another one within like 3 or 4 days, and this one had no problems. But basically just real simple, temperature up, temperature down, and then you use the knob to control the rate of the air coming out. And it's like I said, if you're doing things, tiny little surface mount, and this is really for more in the repair world. So at least the way I use it. So I've got my little reflow, a little toaster oven, where for the initial construction, initial assembly, I'll take my circuit board, put the solder paste on, and put it in the oven. And we use a thing called the reflowster to control, do a little temperature profile. But sometimes the parts don't all work perfectly. And sometimes you realize you put like an integrated circuit on backwards. So what these little reflow tools allow you to do, imagine if you got like a little IC that has like four pins, you take your little soldering iron, you try to go to each one. Well, by the time you've got one to reflow and you take your, the solder tip away, it solidifies again. This guy puts enough heat over the whole thing that you can easily, again, using those little tweezers, you can take a integrated circuit you may have put on backwards and get that fixed. So it's good for kind of like, you know, onesies, twosies. But if you're doing a whole board of parts, I'd recommend doing a reflow oven, just the standard Black & Decker, you know, toaster oven works just fine. So I think that's it. So I'm trying to think if there's any other notes. So again, gearsofresistance.com. There will be links to everything we talked about, especially if you're interested in supporting Ahmed. You know, hashtag I stand with Ahmed is pretty much on every social media thing. You'll find something. I personally donated to the GoFundMe because it came. It was a link that was provided by a reputable news source. Versus, I'm sure there's, you know, people. There's always great people in the world. took advantage of it, but this is the one that I felt comfortable using again because it came. The link to it was like CNN or NBC. So I'll have the link to that too. God, it irks me. The Ahmed story just really got me upset. But better tomorrow will be a better day, and hopefully Ahmed will be taken care of, and it looks like he will be. So that's good news. So with that, thank you all very much for listening, and until next week or the week after, whenever we do this again, I think we're going to follow up today with another episode of Steam Power Podcast. Maybe I'll do my rant again. Anyway, thanks for watching, and until next time, stay quirky.